Every single day I feel it.
Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm best, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
What's up, what's up? Your boy C-Rock back in that one studio on the What Are You Made Of show. I got my guy Adam Corey in the building. Well, again, he's not in my building. He's in his building, but he's in this building. And I met Adam out at the Risk On, the second annual Risk On in Vegas. Shout out to Todd Ault. And, you know, I was speaking on a panel there this time, and then Adam was speaking. And, man, I said, man, I got to get with this guy. And so we connected, and I, you know, invited him on the show. He's the vice president at Marsh McLennan Companies and is based in Miami. He helps companies with their insurance needs, property, casualty, and health. Also, prior to insurance, Adam was the managing partner and president of Unconventional Strategies, a boutique lobbying and business consulting firm with clients across the U.S. His background also includes a successful tenure as a government affairs consultant with the Gunster Law Firm and as an executive at International Oil Trading Company, an energy and logistics company that supported U.S. military during the Iraq War. We're going to learn a lot about Adam today on the What Are You Made Of show. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, man. So look, here's the thing. So we like to find out the deep, dark journey that people go through to get to where they are. Okay. You're living a great life right now. From my point of view, living in Miami, doing your thing, you got several businesses and a great experience, but what we don't know is the stuff that you had to go through to get there, the ingredients. So I'm going to ask you the famous question, Adam, what are you made of?
Determination.
Yeah. Yeah.
Waking up every day and recognizing that no matter what you go through, you just got to keep pushing through one step at a time.
So it sounds like to me, and I've done, I don't know how many episodes now, it's like 700 episodes here on this show. It sounds like to me that answer really, really says that you've gone through some things that, you know, required that determination, required, man, oh shit, what's happening? Or things didn't go as exactly the way you expected them to on your journey. So let's hear about it, Adam. Everybody's got a story. Where did it all start for you? Take us back, you know, as far back as you want to go to being a kid. Where'd you grow up? Like, just give us a story, brother.
Sure. I was born in Tampa, Florida, to a hardworking mom and dad. My dad was a car salesman at a place called Ernie Hare Ford in Tampa, and my mother was a waitress. And I was the youngest of four kids, born in a little town called Valrico, Brandon area, just outside of Tampa. And then, you know, kind of grew up. Eventually, my family moved to Massachusetts. My dad continued to work in the car business. My mom worked in the car business after that. And growing up, my dad loved, two things, singing karaoke and selling cars. And he was just always listening to self-help cassettes.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah. So anytime I was riding the car, I'd hear Zig Ziglar, you know.
Tommy Hopkins, Zig Ziglar.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just so my family was the first, one of the first, not first, but they were involved in Amway. And I remember driving to, you know, an Amway convention and listening to Zig Ziglar on the stage at the time. Just sort of being fascinated with this idea of, you know, growing and becoming better than yourself and building something. So, I learned a lot, I think, in my childhood years about shooting for the stars.
Now let me ask you, I have done a lot of that myself, the training and all that growing up. I've been in sales since 1998. Officially, I've sold stuff before that. I don't really want to talk about, but 1998, got into sales and started doing these things, and did all the trainings, all those things, and then Grant Cardone University, all this, and then I got my kids listening to it on the way to school, but my son would get annoyed by it. Did you ever, as a kid, get annoyed by the way like your dad would try to teach you some of the personal development he was learning or sales training or any of that?
You know, I don't think so, because it just sort of I don't think it was forced down my throat, so to speak. It was more for him, you know.
Yeah,
I just happened to be the young kid on the side, you know, sitting in the car listening, and it was either that music or nothing, right? So, you know, and I think as a child, right, you always sort of put your parents on the pedestal, and you're like, mm-hmm. ah, I I want to be that. I want to do that. And
yeah,
I always thought my parents were really cool until I was a teenager and I thought, ah, they're not as much fun. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
So you go through those ebbs and flows, but by the time I hit my teenage years, I was on another journey. So, it kind of all worked out. It led me, I think, to my next journey. Right.
Yeah.
You grow up with sort of these cassette tapes and all this stuff. And then when I got to high school, I'm like, oh, I want to be involved. I want to be in the business club, and I want to be in the political club. Right. And I ended up becoming student body vice president, you know, and got involved in politics and that sort of thing, you know, at a high school level and then a college level. And then eventually at a, state, federal, and international level.
Yeah. So you just kept going with it. So speaking of that, then in the business side of things and politics side of things, how do those two mix and how are they also kind of different? You know, because I always said this thing where we need a business person as president one day. We need a business person. And then finally Trump comes along and he's a business person.
Yeah.
And now from my point of view, okay, I look past, I see the good in people, okay? I'm not the kind of guy that picks out all the negative stuff. And so finally I got a president that I could see runs business, but it's also politics. And then we start to see how these things, like, it's a cluster, right?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that from your experience, like business and politics?
Yeah, no, I live in Florida, and I think Florida's done a very good job at being a state that focuses and supports business. And I think our government is structured as well. It's a part-time government, unlike other states that may have a full-time government where you have elected officials that serve year round and cannot hold a different position, kind of like the federal government. In Florida, the by design, we're a state that, you know, you're supposed to be a school teacher or a lawyer or, you know, a podcast host or a mortgage broker, right? And then you can run for office and serve in our part-time government. And so that way it's really for the people, by the people kind of thing, right? There's people that are involved in their daily, you know, locations, cities, communities, and they understand the nuts and bolts of whatever industry they're in. So I like the way we do it here because I really think it creates a system where, it's filled with people that are really engaged in the day to day of what every human goes through. But yeah, it's interesting. You brought up Donald Trump and, I mean, you know, what a fascinating journey this has been. It's crazy. It's wild. And I won't weigh into the political side of it too much, but, I assume you're a little bit of a conservative, or maybe a lot of a conservative, and I kind of lean that way too. You know, business makes government go round, and you know, and I think it's critical that you know, we have people that understand that background and that aren't just career politicians. I think we need people that live and breathe the business, you know, world.
Yeah,
because that's America.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%, man, 100%. Now, by the way, I'm not into labels. I just always am thinking, like, what's best, you know, what's the optimal solution for, and for me, for my family, for my companies, for people's companies, and then on up the ladder, all the way to, you know, if you look, think about dynamics, like all the, like, what's the best thing? That's what I go for. Like, I'm not into this divisiveness, this one side, pick one side and all that. Like, you can kiss my ass, not you, but like kiss my ass. I do what I want to do based on that. So, now what was the first, like, if we're thinking back right in your life, whether it's professional, personal, like what's the first thing you ran into that was like a serious challenge to you?
You know, I think we all go through battles, right? And again, that's why I said, you know, what are you made of? It's determination, because no matter what's happened, right? Or resilience would be another good word. But, you know, I remember as a kid, you know, being on the Pop Warner football team, right? My parents, you know, spent the whatever, $80 to put me on the team. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I want to be a football player and da, 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 right? And then, you know, 2 weeks later, I'm like, oh, I want to go hang out with my friends, or I want to go, you know, swim in the river or whatever it was, you know, and I want to quit. And my parents are like, no, that doesn't happen. It doesn't work like that, right? You commit to something, you keep going. And I'm so happy that they forced that on me, right? Or not really forced. If I chose to do something, I had to fulfill that commitment. because that's helped me get through so much more of every situation I've had in my life. But one of the things I shared at Todd's event, and shout out to Todd Ault, good man, thanks for connecting us, was, you know, I went through as a lobbyist, I was living in Tallahassee, Florida, and I represented some clients that were trying to build a community in the south side of Tallahassee, a blighted area. They're going to build like a mixed use development. Nice guys came into town, and come to find out, they were undercover FBI agents that were basically investigating public corruption in the city of Tallahassee. And it didn't have to do with me. It had to do with elected officials. But I was just sort of an entry point for them to get in and look under the hood, so to speak, and see if there was, you know, bad stuff going on. And
wait a minute, slow down. So right at that point, so first of all, as a lobbyist, you're paid by a company to go and fight for their right, or not fight, but promote their agenda.
Yeah.
Try to get their way, right? What does a lobbyist do, basically? Yeah. What did you do?
So I think a lot of people have a confused understanding of what a lobbyist is. But a lobbyist, let me give you actually where the term comes from, okay? Because it's important. So when this country was formed, and you're going to Washington, D.C. here in a few days, right? When this country was formed, and they built that Capitol in Washington, D.C., and on each side of the Capitol, you have a house. There's the Senate and the House, right? These two chambers. And then in the middle is the rotunda, okay,
yep.
Big hall, and there's a lobby in there. Well, what happened is in the early days, you know, you had these senators and you had these representatives who were there, and they'd say, oh, shoot, we got to go out there and we got to see those people in the lobby, those lobbyists. And so that's where the term lobbyist came from.
Yeah, yeah.
That those are the people sitting there that wanted to influence or talk about what these two groups were making decisions on. So a lobbyist is really an advocate for something. It could be an advocate for cancer treatment drugs. It could be an advocate for children's initiatives. It could be an advocate for cable companies. It could be an advocate for banks. I represented the gamut. I represented PNC Bank for 7 years. I represented divisions of Comcast Cable. I represented the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, all bars and restaurants, hotels in the state of Florida. So I had a wide scope. And so oftentimes, you know, these groups like, the big issue with the Florida Restaurant Lodging Association, for example, was, you know, minimum wage issues, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you have certain groups that come in that want to elevate the minimum wage so quickly and so rapidly. And you know, you could, if you do it the wrong way, you could bankrupt small businesses, you know, little mom and pop pizza restaurants or little mom and pop, you know, bars that, you know, are used to paying $8.37 an hour. And all of a sudden you're telling them to go to $20 an hour. That's a big gap. And in communities where people can't afford to, you know, pay or double the amount they're going to pay for a, you know, nachos and cheese or guacamole, right, or whatever.
Right.
So my job was to advocate, you know, really by, you know, visiting with legislators and staff and talking about the ramifications of changing laws and to be thoughtful in our approach, if that makes
sense. And did you get paid for results too? Is that part of it? Are you allowed to be, or?
No. So in the state of Florida, it's retainer based. You can't have an incentive-based system in lobbying. The idea is, you know, you come to me and you say, "Hey, Adam, I want to get a permit to build a new building here, and I want it to be the zoning to be changed to, you know, go from residential to commercial or something like that." I have to, you know, come up with a fee for that in advance, and it's based solely on that fee. There's no incentive.
Gotcha. And then how, like, what's your tactic or strategy when you wanted to lobby someone? How did you get in with that senator, congressman, whatever it is? Like, what?
Yes. So if you think about it this way, it wasn't that I had to go get in with anybody at that point. You know, going back to my experience, right? When I was in high school, I was in student body vice president of my high school, right? And then when I got to college, I was student body president of my university. I started at Florida Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers, and then I transitioned or transferred to Florida State later on. There's 11 at the time, 11 state universities in the state of Florida. And so there were 11 student body presidents at that time. I think 9 of us all ended up in politics, right? Some became elected officials in the state. Some became lobbyists. Some became sort of business people. But, and when I graduated, I continued to be involved. And when my friends would run for office, you know, if I liked what they were doing, I'd support them. So being involved in the process for years and years and years, I already have relationships with, you know, the mayors or, you know, the representatives or the senators. And so it's funny because people call me and say, hey, you know, I need to talk to the governor about, you know, something, you know, can you set me up? And it's like, well, sure, you know, but there's a cost associated with that, you know, and they're like, oh, I just need you to make one phone call. And it's like, well, yeah, you don't know what it's taken to get to be able to make that.
That's where the value is. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so, all right. So then from there, go back now to the, if you don't mind, I want to hear about this. So you had no idea that this was, these were FBI. Yeah. And so you're doing your normal thing. You're working for someone. Tell us the story. Like how did it all go down?
So it's funny because I can, you know, really talk about it now, but I mean,
by the way, this is like Donnie Brasco. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for 7 years of my life. I mean, it definitely changed my life. It consumed my life in ways that were unimaginable. But you know, I can look back at it now and say, okay, you know, this is how the world works sometimes. And you can either, you know, get angry, get upset, feel like a victim, or you can stand up and say, all right, I learned something from that. Now we move on and we do something better and bigger. But in short, you know, this was a group of, there was a group of people at the Justice Department who felt like there was public corruption happening, in Tallahassee. They were right. They ended up, coming in there and they were trying to figure out a way in to, you know, to be undercover and be able to meet all the people without being, you know, I guess, blown up, right? Their cover. And so that when they approached me, it was an interesting group. Their story was, hey, you know, we used to work in the cannabis business, or we made a lot of money, and you know, cannabis had just got approved in the state of Florida. It's a cash business. So they were like, hey, we want to come here, we want to spend some money, we're going to build this building in cash, and we just need to meet people. And so really innocuous. And you know, there was part of me that said something's funny about these guys.
I was going to ask, was there any red flags or?
Yeah, there was. I mean, they're definitely, you know, but, you know, then I would, my brain would say, okay, what am I doing for them? Okay. It's just normal stuff, but it did a little bit feel like that movie Blow. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny Depp, where he's like, wait, these are my friends. Oh wait, you know, cause I actually like these guys. They were cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
they were fun. I'd work out with them. They'd come once a week, once a month, hang out in Tallahassee. And
they were the actual agents or hired by the FBI?
No, they were agents.
Okay. This is great. Yeah.
Yeah. And these were my buddies. I mean, I got to know these guys over a year and a half. I mean, almost
Holy
2 years
shit.
Just hanging out in Tallahassee and working on projects. And there were times where I'd get, you know, kind of the head on, all right, hey, I've got this schematic being done. I've got the building department's interested in talking to you, you know, about, you know, XYZ. Oh, we don't need to worry about that right now. I'm like, I thought we were on a timeline. You know, I thought
right.
you got a window, you know, where the money goes hard. Don't we need to get this thing going? And so then it started to like, look like, okay, maybe this isn't what I thought it was. And then what happened is over time, they built their own relationships outside of me. And an investigation took place, and they ended up indicting a few people. I was not one of them. I was not a target. But because I was the, you know, closest figure in the middle of it, I got, you know, kind of run through the mud. The newspaper.
Yeah, I can imagine.
This guy, you know, Corey, a central figure of an FBI investigation, right? So, you know, overnight, when the information got put out there that there was a major indictment and subpoenas, I became the poster child of the news, and I was in. I mean, it was from New York Times to CNN to USA Today. I mean, every major. I always wanted to be on the cover of these papers. You know,
yeah, not for that.
Not in that realm, right? So
not infamous.
Yeah. So it's funny because you grew up in politics too. They say all press is good press. And for a while there, I was questioning that. But
well, when was the first time you were alerted to it?
Oh, it's funny. I was in Russia. I was in St. Petersburg, Russia, on a cruise with my university. I was a supporter of a booster fundraiser, and we did a Baltic cruise. And I got a phone call from my lawyer saying, "Hey, where are you?" And I said, "I'm in Russia." And he goes, "Oh, it sounds like it sounds even worse, right? I'm in Russia.
Yeah,
what is going on?" And he started telling me, he goes, "Hey, do you know these guys?" And I said, "Yeah." And it, but in my gut right then, before he even like spit it out, I'm like, I see this.
Holy shit.
And I'll tell you, thank God. Right. I had a good upbringing, good parents and some solid ethical lines, so to speak, because there were times where these guys, they tried to involve me in their process and their ideas, and they would bring up things like, "Hey, let's go, take this person on a trip and give them money," and I'm like, "Why? You don't do that," and I shut that down every time, because one, I just didn't understand where they were going, right? We didn't have anything really important on the table, so to speak, that we even needed that support for. So the whole thing to me was interesting. Tallahassee is not a very wealthy town.
Yeah.
The south side of Tallahassee is a blighted area. So when somebody comes in and says, "Do you want to spend $30 million, and build a mixed-use facility in an area that's only going to lift the property values and create jobs," poor cities are going to say, "Come on,
we'll
roll out the red carpet for you." And you don't have to bribe anybody to do that. not that we would, right? But you're doing something positive, you're going to get positive things.
Yeah. So did that ruin the rest of your cruise?
Were you
sick to your stomach and just wondering, even though you felt like you did everything ethically, like just wondering, like, how am I involved with this? And
you're going to drive to Washington, D.C., or you're flying?
We're driving after this interview. Yeah.
Right. You're going to get on the highway, right? You're going to start cruising, right? And then you're going to get distracted. You're going to have music on. And as you're driving, you've had this experience before, right? All of a sudden you look up in your rearview mirror and you see blue lights.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what happens?
Stomach drops.
Stomach drops. You're like, "Oh my gosh, what's happening?" And then you look down at your speedometer and you're 5 miles under the speed limit. And you go, "Okay, I'm good." Mm-hmm. Right. So that's a short window where you get relieved. Mine was a longer window because I didn't know. Right. I didn't know if there was something out there that, like, I mean, I felt like I didn't do anything wrong.
But still. Yeah.
But then I'm like, my head's going through so many things, and now there's this big investigation. I'm thinking, I've been out there with these guys for a year and a half. Did I say something inappropriate? I don't know. What am I involved in? But then I had to remind myself, I'm not the elected official. I can't be bribed I'm not elected. I mean, you can pay me for my services and for my advice and for my recommendations, but if you want to give me $50,000, well, that's okay because I'm a businessman.
Yep. Yeah. So did that ruin the lobby career? Like,
it did.
Nobody.
Probably within 2-3 weeks of being showcased in the paper, that this crazy thing was happening, every client politely called me or sent me a letter or whatever saying, "Hey, Adam, love ya." this is definitely a distraction that we can't afford. And so, and people were nice, you know, hey, when things settle down, it's back to normal business. The reality is, you know, the wheels of government, grind slow, but they always grind. And so it took, you know, a long, long time to kind of get through that and for the information to be, you know, finally showcased. And so by the time that was done, I had sort of moved on.
Yeah. And so a lot of people go through these transitions, right? Things happen out of their control. COVID was one of them. For me, the mortgage business, interest rates going up. I just didn't like the mortgage business anyway, but it was a, but you know, I got out of it, but there's a transition I had to go through, right?
Yeah.
Like what was that like with your transition and how did you transition out of that?
Yeah. So it was tough. I mean, but I'll tell you this, and this is what I spoke about, you know, at the conference is relationships. Thankfully there were some key people in my life that, looked past, you know, what they saw in the paper. And if, I mean, candidly, if you read the paper, it looked like I was a villain. It never said I did anything wrong, but I'm, you know, when you associate somebody with FBI, Justice Department, right, it starts to look bad. Although Donald Trump is sort of changing that right now. It's like, you know, everybody gets in trouble. You know, maybe not true. But at the time, you know, it just people start to think it, believe it. If you read it so often, you start thinking, well, oh, maybe this guy is, you know, doing something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I had to like, you know, reconfigure what I was going to do. My lawyer said, look, he goes, get out of Tallahassee. You know, you don't need to be here because, you know, there's just so much going on. I don't believe you've done anything. I've looked at everything. I think you're fine, but you know, this town is small and you're just, and all your business is dried up. Go find something else to do. And still need to make money, right? Yeah. I've done pretty well as a lobbyist, had great clients, but you know, when your spigot turns off overnight and I had employees, I had to let people go. I'm like, oh, man, you know, and of course I want to give people a severance, but I'm like, you know, trying to figure all that stuff out and be respectful to my team and help them identify or find new jobs and then not get caught up in the deal. So funny enough, the Hurricane Irma was coming through the state of Florida. They had a shortage of insurance adjusters. So I ended up, a friend of mine's like, oh, you should be an insurance adjuster. I'm like, how did I do that? You know?
Right.
And so I took a 24-hour course and I became an insurance adjuster. And so I joke, I traded in my, you know, my Gucci suit for a tool belt. And I went house to house in Miami, you know, measuring roofs and looking at damage and taking photos and, you know, working as an insurance adjuster post hurricane. And then I just kind of like, you know, was trying to figure out what is my next move going to be. And it took me a while and I did some fun things throughout that. And I'll tell you, when you get kicked in the nuts, sometimes it stops you, right? And you got to think, all right, what am I going to do? And I was actually able to take some time for myself and relax a little bit. I was still nervous because all this stuff was going on. I was hoping, can it be over in 3 months? No, went on for years. And I was out in Italy. I love wine. I own a restaurant in Tallahassee, Florida. And even my restaurant was getting beat up because it was like,
oh man,
you know, like I had caterings, people were canceling their weddings. They're like, oh my gosh, we have to cancel it because the FBI might shut down the restaurant. I'm like, that's not going to happen. But you know, people's minds, they're reading about it.
Jeez.
But I loved wine. Right. So I would go around and I ended up in Italy looking at new wines for my restaurant, more or less. It's kind of a, you know, a boondoggle, but and when I was there, I met this Australian couple, and they owned a big winery in Adelaide, Australia, and they invited me to come to Australia and experience their wine. And this woman's name, she's Sarah Marquis, is the owner of this Molly Duker Winery. She's awesome. And I said, "Well, how long should I come?" She goes, "Oh, at least a month." And
jeez.
I'm like, "Wow, that's a really friendly invitation." So anyway, I ended up, you know, after the Irma deal, I ended up out in Australia for 5 weeks and learned about the wine, how to make wine. And, you know, I just fell in love with the whole Australian culture and playing with, you know, the kangaroos and all the wild animals. And by the end of that, she said, you know what? I need your help. Why don't you become my director of U.S. sales and sell some wine, right? So it goes back to, if you're a salesperson, you're always a salesperson, right? You're in
right.
It. And it was awesome. So I ended up, you know, coming back to the States 5 weeks later And I went to like, I don't know, 30 different states traveling around showcasing wine and just having fun with that. It was amazing. The only tough part about being, you know, a wine salesperson is you drink a lot. And I was kind of at the point, I'm like, all right, I love this, but boy, I can't do this forever.
And so now looking back on the situation with the lobbyist situation, the FBI and all that, do you look at that now and have a different perspective on it and think, wow, I'm glad that happened?
Yes. I definitely do. Cause I think about that moment at that time and where I was, and I was making good money. I just bought a beautiful, new house in Tallahassee. I renovated it. You know, I got a restaurant. Tallahassee's a small town. It was fun, but it was, you know, a single, and not really, you're either young there or you're old kind of thing. It's mm-hmm. not really an in-between crowd. Age. It's the college kids. And then it's like the state workers who come back when they're, you know, 50s or older and working. So that sweet spot there was missing. And I just thought, maybe I should be somewhere else. So, yeah, I mean, I look back at it and, you know, it forced me into a new realm. And, you know, I ended up living, you know, in South Florida. And I went to Dominican Republic for a while, went to Australia for a while. And then I ended up in Amsterdam for a little bit. And now I'm in Miami, and I can tell you, Miami is the coolest place I've ever lived. I mean, I love it here. There's so much happening. The people are great. There's every age group, every kind of, you know, culture. And it's, this is where I really feel like I'm meant to be. So I'm happier today than I've ever been.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. I think it's important for everybody to understand, because some people listening right now may be going through something, or they have this thing where they know they should be moving on to a different career, a different town or whatever, and they're just holding on. I just got back from LA last week, and I do a lot of work when I'm out there on myself. And one of the cognitions that I had while I was out there is move faster when you know the answer. Like we get hung up sometimes, and then we go through this conflicting emotional roller coaster. Like you're not supposed to be doing what you're doing. You know, you need to make a change. Maybe the people around you need to change, whatever it is. And I just came to that realization, like, move faster when you know.
Yeah.
And so I love that we're talking about this. So now, as we wind down here, what are you working on right now that's got you excited?
So I got recruited 4 years ago into the insurance business. And I started with a company called Aon, which is the second largest insurance broker on the planet. And then within 1 year, I had some really good success in my first year, and I was recruited by Marsh McLennan Companies, which you mentioned, which is the largest insurance broker on the planet. I love this business. It's a residual income kind of business. So when you get a client, if you do a good job for your client, you can keep that client forever, right? And to contrast that with a lobbyist, right? When I look back at it, you know, if I did a really good job as a lobbyist for a client, you know, they'd hire me to go, hey, fix this issue or get this, you know, appropriation or whatever it was. And if I solved their problem, I lost my job, right? I lost my contract, right? Because you're rewarded by, oh, thank you. Hey, you know, here's your monthly payment. See you later.
Right.
So you're constantly in a state of having to, you know, find new clients. In this business, you know, if I do a really good job for a customer, they renew it, they renew it. They renew it. They renew it. They buy another company. I get that too. This is a great business. It's a service that's really, really needed. Like, I feel good about what I do. You know, when a catastrophe comes and somebody loses their business, you know, and their business is interrupted, or their income's up interrupted, or their building, you know, blows away, we're there to help them. That's my main business. Is working for Marsh McLennan, and I get to work globally. We have offices in 130 countries. I was just in Dubai and Abu Dhabi last week, meeting with my team there. I picked up some great clients that operate internationally, and so I love that. I'm fascinated by that. I like talking to people. I like meeting people from different cultures. I like traveling, and I like making sure that, you know, my clients are taken care of.
The thing is, you talked about this in Vegas at Risk On, like, you're a relationship dude, and there's no easier selling no easier running a business and building a business if you're good at relationships and understand the power of relationships, yeah, and how to start them and how to nurture them and how to take people on a journey. It's, yeah, it's amazing. You actually created what I call an attraction model. And, okay, and that's a really powerful thing to be able to do versus a chase model. My whole life prior, I was chasing. I think you've been there too. You're probably chasing, yeah, right? And so I've created an attraction model too. And part of that is getting known, not just in the circle that you're in, but we talked about this. Like, I've figured out this way to get known by people that I don't know who they are, right? And it just makes it all, it's so much easier. So as we finish here, I just wanted to touch on one thing real quick when it regards to businesses and insurance. And I think a lot of people don't know this is out there, but do you do key man policies? Like, there's, yeah, people that have businesses and they don't think about this. Like, if Joe leaves or something happens to Joe or injured, death, whatever, that's a threat to the business. But most people don't even look. Number one, think about the threat. Number two, yeah, think that there's something out there to help them. So you do those?
We do. Yeah, we have a. And you're right. It's critically important, right? I mean, there are certain people that are key to that business that they're involved in. And if that person, something, God forbid, happens to them, you know, who's going to fill that void, right? And do you have the resources to continue on for the short period or the long period until you fill that role? So no, that's something we do a lot of. Be happy to help anybody with it at any point in time.
I just figured because we probably have some entrepreneurs mostly listening. And it's important to know that. And, you know, I didn't know it back in the day. And then I got one. And then for the new company we're setting up now, I do want to talk to you about that, that we're working on right now. So, yeah, definitely. And so you can work all over the place, too. So it doesn't matter to the listeners. They could be in all 50 states.
Yeah, they could be in anywhere in the world. You know, I'm working on stuff in Panama right at the moment. I've got stuff in Dubai. You name it, we're in it.
All right. So where can the people find you? Where's the best place for them to engage with you or find you if they're interested in insurance or whatever?
Email's great. Adam.Corey, Corey, at marsh.com. LinkedIn's great. Adam, I think it's AD Corey or something like that.
I got it right here. It's Adam Corey. Ad Corey is the username. But if you look up Adam Corey, Vice President at Marsh, you'll find him pretty easily.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Adam, thank you so much for being here, brother. Well, I could talk for hours because I want to get into more, but we got to keep this show at 30 to 40 minutes. And I appreciate your time, brother. It's been a great conversation. And I hope people learned a couple things. There's some powerful messages in the story.
Well, I really appreciate it. This is a lot of fun.
Thanks, man. Hold tight while I wrap this up. Folks, thank you for being here on the What Are You Made Of show here from That One Studio. It's your boy, C-Rock. Make sure you like, subscribe, go check out the Instagram page at Mikey C-Rock. We're putting a lot of great content out for you to make sure you understand that you're unstoppable to live in the life of your dreams. Until next time, it's your boy C-Rock signing off from That One Studio. Be That One.
Music licensing.